Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are we not the bestest of friends already?
Only in media.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast that has a list of everyone who wrote a The Stars Are Amazingly Healthy article and is going to be coming for you, all of you, every single one of you. It's time to do some stargazing. Hey, Mark, how's it going?
My knees are fine, but my brain is not.
It was a, we're of course talking Friday morning, right after the lovely overtime loss to the Colorado Avalanche. It's been a week, Mark. I think since the last time we spoke, Dallas has barely beaten a terrible team, has blown the absolute doors off a terrible team, has barely lost to a terrible team, and lost in overtime to a great team. So we've learned a ton, and I think we've grown as people. But we're going to talk about all of it. We're going to talk about the obvious Miro Heiskanen knee situation that's developing after the third period last night. We're going to talk about Scott Wedgwood, backup goaltender extraordinaire, tying in Jake Oettinger, as well as some news on that front. And then I have some opinions about, of course, the consequential play in overtime and Dallas's decision to run at several points with three forwards as a unit out there. So there's some stuff, and I'm sure, Mark, you've got some zingers and some takes warming up on the old take grill to get through in today's podcast. So it's going to be a lot. It's going to be some good stuff. Really excited. Where do you want to start?
I'd say, I mean, everything that's foremost in everyone's mind is Miro Heiskanen and what this potentially means for the Dallas Stars.
I think that's a good place to start. And to set the stage a little bit, right? Friday morning, as of right now, we know that he went down in a heap with Scott Wedgwood. It appears to be, I don't know that anybody has directly said the word knee, but like, it seems like it's a knee related issue. As far as DeBoer's concerned, we've got his quotes from after the game where it's basically they're evaluating. We don't right now, as of, you know, the time we're recording Friday morning, we don't know exactly what happened. We don't have a timeline. We don't have anything to speculate on. We just know that he did not, he left last night's game and did not return after that collision with Wedgwood. And I think, the way that I want to address this is, really, for the Stars, I think that there is a short-term, situation and a long-term situation, right? We're obviously going to hope for the best. He's young, he's spry. Guys go down. Sometimes it looks awful. They pop right back up. Other times, bad things happen. So I think what I want to do for the sake of our discussions, we're going to talk first about what the Stars might do in the immediate term. And then second is we're going to go to the negative place, and we're going to talk about what the Stars might do if it turns out he's going to miss a significant chunk of time here down the stretch. So, Mark, let's start with that near term. Dallas has there is the NHL schedule is unrelenting, and they've got games coming up. They've got a game tomorrow night against Nashville. Then they've got Minnesota on Monday, and again on Wednesday, Nashville on Friday. So they're coming fast and they're coming furious. What do the Stars do right now regarding their defense?
I mean, I'm going to assume for the sake of argument here that Miro is probably lost to the team for a handful of games.
So it's really hard to see him playing before Wednesday, right? Based on how it looked, like, even if everything is fine, just going through the process of finding out that everything is fine, it's really hard to see him on the ice Monday against Minnesota in Minnesota.
Yeah. And so really we're talking about what is the team going to do on Saturday if Miro's not available? And what you have Texas is actually at home, so this is not a bad thing. We have the freeway that should be open. It should be weekend traffic.
So which means it could take anywhere between 20 minutes and 20 hours to get from Austin to Dallas.
There are helicopters and various things like that as well, if push comes to shove. But worst case scenario is the Stars still have 6 defenders. They have some players who can fit various portions of the role that Miro Heiskanen plays with Dallas. So particularly, you're probably talking about a call-up for either Derek Pouliot or Alek Petrovic. Both of them are what you would consider to be, you know, AHL, NHL guys. They both have over 250 NHL games under their belt. They do some things well, but they're in Texas for a reason, and so they'll be slightly in the Joel Hanley category.
So it's, you think, you see it as one of those situations where everybody kind of bumps up and they're filling in spots down lineup versus spots on that top pairing.
Right, exactly. And to tell you the truth, I think this is probably a situation why Gavin Bayreuther was brought in, but yep. Bayreuther went down after game one, and so it's kind of next man up.
And yeah, I think that's a great point. This is exactly why you signed Gavin Bayreuther in the offseason. This moment in time is what he is for. So that it's funny how, you know, an injury in an AHL game, fast forward several months, and all of a sudden that is a Dallas problem.
Right. And you can also take a look at Leon Bixel's decision to go back to Sweden. Mm-hmm. And say maybe this is the spot where Bixel could have had his NHL debut. And
do you really think Jim Nill would have gone to that option?
I think that he would have considered it. You're talking about somebody who's going to get potentially limited minutes, who can still move the puck and make an impact on the game. And so, you know, based on the trajectory that I saw with Bixel in Texas, yeah, it would be a consideration. But it's certainly something that Bixel's decision to go to Sweden has had some, in retrospect, was not a great decision in that Rugel kind of lost their whole identity right after he moved over there. His numbers haven't been really great in 7 games since he's been there. And now he's kind of limited himself to being there for the rest of the year. So in retrospect, maybe he likes the decision, but there are some things that could have worked out better for him if he would have gone the other way.
Yeah, and I guess, so just talking about roster move, you mentioned, you know, a couple of options down in Cedar Park. We're kind of assuming that this is a lifeline to Nils Lundqvist, right? He's got to tag back into the lineup at this stage, right?
Yeah, and I think we saw what we're going to see, which is, you know, Esa Lindell's time is going to jump dramatically. I wouldn't be surprised if he completely eats up all of Heiskanen's minutes. So you're talking about a Lindell at 25 minutes a game. You're talking about Lindell paired with Suter, and Lindell's going to play his offside. So I know
think it's that. Any chance they just slot Harley in next to Suter?
I doubt it. I seriously doubt it. I mean, this is the way the third period was. And there was some mixing there because we only had 5 defenders. But Lindell has shown that he can play off on the offside. He periodically surprises you with his general abilities. I mean, this is a guy who was the best defender in Sweden for a year. There are some skills there.
Yeah.
But you're still probably going to be talking about somebody who's going to clear the puck up the boards, and it's slightly less easy to do if you're on your offside, but you can still rim it around from playing a right D as opposed to a left D. So if he sticks to form, he'll eat the minutes. And then I think what you end up having is, I think you maybe get Harley moving up to play with Hakanpää. He's had experience playing with kind of larger stay-at-home defenders in the past and has done okay that way. And then you're going to see limited minute. You know, we always say, you know, Dallas may has probably a little more depth than a lot of places. I think you're going to see a really sheltered third pair with Lundqvist and Hanley.
Do you think that the David Castillo's idea of moving Radek Foxa back to the defensive core becomes any closer to a reality here? Sorry, I had to bring a little levity into the conversation. This is not a fun thing to discuss.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to take a look, you know, losing somebody on defense is kind of the worst case scenario here, because all of these nice little trinkets and baubles that we've been enamored with and want to see come up from the AHL, they're all forwards.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, we don't want to, we don't want to see a defender come up, and certainly not, certainly there's nobody anywhere who's going to replace Haskinen. So it's kind of all hands on deck and let's see what's happening.
How do you think this changes Thomas Harley's profile? And sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Mark.
No. I think you're right. I think Harley has an opportunity here to prove that he is a number one. I don't think he's going to be given that opportunity initially, but I think he can play his way into it. And that's kind of the same situation that Lundqvist is going to be in. He's going to be given ice time, but he's going to have to earn the respect and the trust of the coaching staff in order to get more than just that, you know, rarely used third pair minutes that I think he's probably going to get.
Yeah, and I can really see as well, like maybe even the mentality of, you're not so much looking at this. Miro is he's singular, but he's singular because he's multiple, right? He is offensive and defensive. And I think in this situation, you don't necessarily look at replacing him one for one. It's not just, you know, one guy on the team that does everything Miro was doing. I could see a situation where, you know, you've already hit on it. Lindell's going to see a bump in his ice time. He's going to play a lot of those tough minutes. And then I could potentially see, like, in terms of the power play, you almost split Miro in two, right? And his kind of offensive responsibilities, as best you can, you distribute to Thomas Harley, while his defensive responsibilities, as best you can, you distribute to Esa Lindell, right? And it's not, you know, hockey isn't football, right? And it's not as simple as, well, you do this half and you do that half and we'll make up the difference. But I think, you know, because you can't just, you know, we're not suddenly going to see Esa Lindell on the number one power play, right? I think to your point, right, Harley probably slots in there. Maybe Ryan Suter, hopefully not. And then, you know, then the second unit, maybe that is Suter. Maybe it's, you know, Nils Lundqvist in some, you know, limited minutes. I don't think they'd go with a five forward look, but after last night, hey, brave new world, who knows? But I think in the short term, yeah, that's, you know, DeBoer and his coaching staff, they have to find a way to take the minutes Miro was playing. And, you know, what was he averaging? Something like 25 minutes a night?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And, so that's what you got to fill.
Yep, Lindell's gonna move from just under 20 to 25. My interest here, and this goes down a bit, this is actually an awkward situation for Joel Hanley, because he's been playing this, you know, ideal seventh defender role, and he's been doing it for a couple years, and he's been doing it at a point when the Stars have been extremely healthy on the back end.
Yep,
and so you're gonna see somebody like Pouliot come in. And if Pouliot can come in and show a glimmer of offense while not sucking it up on defense, this is potentially a challenge to Hanley's role, which is kind of the great equalizer who's going to take offense and defense out of the game. If anybody who comes up from Cedar Park shows that they can bring something while not losing something, Hanley could find himself back in Cedar Park as a result of this.
Yeah, and conversely, right, maybe there's more to his game, and he's you know, been kind of forced into this role, and he has a chance to escape it. It reminds me of, my dad was a big college football guy, and one of the jokes he would always make is the most popular player on a team is the backup quarterback, right? And everybody loves him up until the moment he has to play, and then you remember he's the backup quarterback. And I kind of feel like Joel Hanley may be in that same situation. You're right. He is a luxury as a, you know, number seven kind of flex defender. He can step in, he can make sure nothing happens in, you know, 12 to 14 minutes of ice time. And that's really it. Well, all of a sudden you need more than that. And
is well, yeah, and we saw last night with his minutes that, you know, even with Haskinen going down, he played 11 minutes last night. And as much as the broadcast said that they were he was gonna pull into the normal rotation, he didn't.
No, he didn't. I mean, you'd think at this stage, right? Whether accurate or not, whether true or not, I would imagine that the coaching staff and the organization have a very clear picture of who they think he is, and, you know, usage and all of those things figured out. And at the end of the day, right, if he was the type of player that you were going to lean on in a late game situation against the Colorado Avalanche trying to defend the lead, you would have been doing that at some point over the past several seasons while he's been with the team, right? Like, yeah, he's been here. If he was that guy, he would be that guy. And the fact that he hasn't been that guy can kind of suggest to you how the team views him.
Yeah. And to tell you the truth, this, you take a look at how the organization has set up the Texas Stars this year, and this is going to come out sounding wrong, but it's kind of a shame this didn't happen last year.
Yeah.
Because last year the team had some depth in Cedar Park. You take a look, Ryan Shea is on an NHL roster. Ben Gleason has spent time with the Edmonton Oilers. There were guys who were right on the cusp down in Cedar Park on the defensive group who could have fallen in a lot easier than what we currently have. You know, the same, I think, is true, and here maybe we should transition. The same is true, I think, with goaltender, where you have a definite, you know, number two who's played now 10 games in a row, and you have a guy up from Cedar Park, but he's been sitting on the bench yep. the entire time.
And I want to get to goaltending. We absolutely will, because, oh boy, do I have thoughts. But before we do that, Mark, I do think I want briefly to wrap up the Haskinen conversation. We've been talking about what the Stars are going to do tomorrow night. What if, and again, we don't want to will anything negative into the world, but you have to make this plan. If the injury turns out to be long-term, do you feel, you know, the approach you outlined, does your thinking about what the Stars will do / should do, and those can be two very different things, does your thinking change if this turns into a significant injury?
I don't think it changes immediately. I think what the team does is they roll with what they can. And the only way that that doesn't just happen and continue to roll that way is if he just absolutely tanks and can't play at all. And, you know, that's certainly a possibility, but I don't think it's a high probability. I think the Stars maybe here are need to start viewing themselves for the next week or two as a team that's on the cusp of sticking with Winnipeg and Colorado on the top end, and looking down at Nashville and Arizona and the various teams that they've gotten some distance from, but not a whole
lot
of distance.
6 points up on Nashville with two games in hand, 9 points up on Arizona equal games in hand. So yeah, there is enough distance that you're not like concerned, but this isn't the part of the horror movie where you're like running through the hallway. This is the part of the horror movie where all the kids are making popcorn and somebody's like, "Hey, I left something in the car." And that's kind of where the Stars are right now. Like, everything's fine, but if Jet decides he needs to go outside.
Yeah, when you notice after 15 minutes that they haven't come back yet, that's kind of the point where you start tearing things apart. Really, that's where a lot of teams make bad decisions by taking a short-term problem and in fixing it, turning it into a long-term problem. And I don't think that's Jim Neal's modus operandi.
No.
But you know, if we do get to the point where all of a sudden this is a Dallas Stars team that's, you know, in that kind of playoff bubble role as opposed to a in but maybe not the number one seed in the conference or the division, then, you know, then you might have to make a more drastic decision. But I think that plays out over the matter of a month. And here this is assuming that injury is in fact something that's going to on LTIR or something like that. There's various cap implications to all this.
I mean, that's the other bit, especially with now that Matt Murray is no longer an emergency recall, Dallas is back down to $21,000 in projected cap space. So that can't get much in today's NHL with 21K. I'm just going to pull out there. I will say the one thing I would say to challenge you, Mark, is if this were a situation where there wasn't a pre-existing problem and he got hurt, I think that would very much be an argument for patience. However, this is a situation where the Stars are bad. The Stars are limited defensively, both in terms of what's on the ice and what's in the system, right? So there was a pre-existing problem, even with Miro. So the I guess the two things I'd say, the first is if it turns into an LTIR situation, you know, I think you almost have to make a move because that gives you, you know, 8.45 is Miro's cap hit, right? So if it's going to be long enough for him to go on LTIR, then it's going to be long enough that you weaponize that space and you get the help that you need. The second piece is, like I said, this is, in my mind, this is, you know, the defense is a pre-existing situation. If you were already planning on doing something, and I don't know what Nell's thinking is, he may not be, right? We've talked in this podcast. I think I've been on team patience before, right? He may not be planning on doing anything. However, if you've been making the quiet calls, if you've been lining up your assets, if you've already been game planning how you're going to fix this thing, I could see Miro's injury being a catalyst to do it now rather than later, right? It's, hey, I was going to do this anyways. You know, I was just, you know, I was going to do this in March. I might as well do it in February, right? I was going to do this in, you know, so if you already had, if you're already game planning options, and yeah, if the team doesn't miss a beat, right? And it's a pretty, you know, knock on wood, right? It's pretty favorable schedule. You know, the we've seen the Predators, they're not going to tax. They're 5-4-1, which isn't bad. Minnesota's 5-5-0. Minnesota's lost four in a row. So like, if ever there was a time to lose a guy, you've got, you know, the Kings on January 16th, and in between it's teams that you should beat, arguably even without Miro Heiskanen, right? So you do have a little bit of time to think. But the one thing I'll say is if Jim Nill had already decided this defensive core isn't the group that I need and I need to make a fix, I could see this injury being a catalyst. Say, well, I'm going to go ahead and do it now, because I need to figure this thing out, and I don't want to wait until Miro comes back, see what Miro is when he gets back, and then make my decision, right? Just maybe one is, I'm going to do one thing at a time. I'm going to make that call. Then we're going to get Miro back, and then we're going to, you know, advance.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly possible. It means that you're negotiating those deals out of necessity as opposed to a position of strength.
I just think you're doing that anyways, right? Everybody knows what the Stars' defensive core is. There's no situation this season when they're negotiating for defensive help from a position of strength. It may be worse.
Well, I mean, trade deadline, you know, you get late enough in the trade deadline, you know, Nil has shown that he has the ability to, you aren't talking about a number one defender, you're probably talking about a second pair defender at best. And if you get somebody, you're going to have more teams at the trade deadline that are definitive sellers. Yeah. And at this point, who's a definitive seller? You probably have half the list that you will at the trade deadline right now, because some teams are still in this, you know, wait and see mode. And if they get on a heater, then maybe they aren't a seller come February, March.
I could see that. If the option you want, if just because it's a name that's floated, right? Maybe you wait, you want to see if things get worse in Calgary, right? What does that do to Chris Tanev?
Right, exactly. But what happens, you know, teams are also going to take a look at Edmonton and say, yeah, Edmonton's now on a heater. And so, you know, a month ago, we would have said they were definitely going to be sellers, and now they're back in the playoff race. So.
Yeah.
No, this is still kind of early. There's still the stories popping around about who's going to be the next St. Louis, you know, last to first win the Stanley Cup. So, you know, you're going to have to be pretty much thinking that you're dead in order to do it. And yet you kind of have to be dead with some expiring assets. You know, people are going to be UFAs where you're just starting your rebuild. And a lot of the teams that have taken themselves out of the playoff hunt at this point are teams that are already in the rebuild. And so there just aren't that many assets that are available. Certainly not ones that are going to move the needle. Anyway, let's kind of move on to our missing all-star goaltender and his admirable backup.
Yeah, we're going to turn that into a teaser. We'll take a very brief break and let KT build an ad break. And then, like I said, we'll come back and talk about Dallas's goaltending situation.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right. So, Mark, I want to start the goaltending conversation with, and apologies, I do not have the exact timestamp, but with Dallas clinging to a one-goal lead last night, Scott Wedgwood, flat on his face, made a tremendous glove save to keep the game tied. And I think even Razor's comment, I thought, was particularly on point, as always is, but he said something to the effect of, it wasn't the save that he intended to make, but he got the result he was looking for. And for me, that's kind of an encapsulation of what the last, 10-ish games have been and who Scott Wedgwood is as a goaltender, because it was a battling save by a goaltender that had every reason to get scored on, right? He was prone and out, and he had to do something really impressive to keep the puck out of the net. However, the reason that he had to make that fantastic save was because on an earlier chance, the chance that brought him to the ice in the first place, as he's trying to deal with that save, he blockered his rebound basically dead center between the faceoff dots and kind of created his own mess. And I think, to me, we've used words like battler, we've used words like effort, we've talked about kind of how Scott Wedgwood looks in the crease. I think that what we're seeing, and file this under, a tough conversation about Scott Wedgwood, frankly, I think what we're seeing is why he's a number two instead of a number one. And some of the traits, not consistency necessarily, but like his struggles at times with rebounds. The game that they needed, overtime to beat Chicago, that game is close because at least two of the Blackhawk goals were pucks that kind of hit Wedgwood and bounced hither and yon, right? He seems to be a guy that has that mentality of, I'm going to stop the puck and then I'm going to figure out everything after that. So I think we're starting to see some of the downsides, right? Like we're starting to see some of why he is where he is versus legitimately pushing. And it's hurt the Stars a little bit over this last stretch.
Yeah, I think, you're bound to see some regression to the mean here. And I think we're seeing a bit of that. He came in after the injury and was the best version of himself that he could be, and just hasn't been able to maintain it. And so now you're seeing that the save percentage is a little south of 90%, and the goals against average is slightly over 3. And these are the kind of numbers that you're going to see from a definite number two. And the Stars, unfortunately, don't have the defensive unit, certainly not now, that is going to be able to make up for that. And so other than, there's this great psychological thing where people step up when things first happen, but then you have to get into your normal routine and you just can't maintain that. If you could maintain that, you'd be better than you are. So that's, I think, where we're getting with Wedgwood. And you can kind of see there, you know, one of the issues that we're going to see that comes up all over the place here, we've already talked about it with Lundqvist, is trust. And there are players that are in this system that are not trusted at the NHL level. And Matt Murray is definitely not trusted. And
yeah.
So Wedgwood has 10 games in a row. I think that this is a record. Do you remember what the number was before, or if this is the number of starts in a row record for him?
Ooh, I don't remember.
Yeah, I think this came up on a broadcast a time or two ago. I think his previous one was maybe 7 or 8. So he's in uncharted territory here with number of starts in a row.
And to give it a little bit of context, right? So, and this is just one statistic, but I think it frames the conversation we're talking about. If you check MoneyPuck, they have a goals saved above expected, right? Where they just look at league average and a bunch of things. Well, what's the league average, right? What would that be? And what are you giving up? And right now, Wedgwood is nestled between Jonas Johansson for the Bolts and Stuart Skinner for the Edmonton Oilers with a negative 7.3 goals saved above what's expected, right? So an average goaltender, the mythical average goaltender, right? The Mendoza line guy would be saving 7.3 more goals than what we're getting out of Scott Wedgwood right now. So he's, you know, the other guys in his general vicinity, James Reimer, Antti Raanta, Anton Forsberg, you know, Arvid Soderblom, Philip Grubauer, surprisingly, UC Soros. This isn't to take a flamethrower to the guy. I think what we're seeing is the last, you know, four games this week are instructive. Is Scott Wedgwood good enough to win with? Yeah, I think he is. Because he battles, he will make that second save. Is he occasionally going to keep a team like Chicago in the game? Yes. Is he occasionally going to cost you a result against Montreal? Not by himself, right? The offense didn't do him any favors until the last minute of that game, right? But you're going to see, you know, is he going to be the guy that can keep the wall up as Colorado kind of hellbent for leather tries to tie and win a game, right? So this is what the Stars have. And I think on the one hand, there are limits, and it is disappointing to see a 2-goal lead against the Avalanche get frittered away. And there are certainly other things going on. On the other hand, right, they've consistently been picking up points. They're the third best team in the conference, right? They're hanging with Colorado until overtime. So it's not like he is submarining their chances or anything, but I think we are very, very eagerly awaiting positive news on Jake Oettinger.
Yeah. And I think the team is too. And at this point with Oettinger back on the ice, you have to kind of think that maybe we aren't going to see Matt Murray at all.
You would think that Montreal, if they were going to play him, wouldn't it have been Montreal?
Or Chicago. They really had three games in a row where he could have seen the ice. So yeah, I don't know. You know, his one NHL win is actually against Chicago. So that I thought was just the ideal time to put him in, but no. And so at this point, you know, you have games every other day up until next weekend. I think we have a Friday, Saturday back to back.
So yeah, I mean, do you send Murray down and play Poirier, right?
Well, that's kind of something I threw that out on Twitter the other day. You know, you almost need to get him a conditioning assignment because Poirier has been playing every game down in Cedar Park, and you know, unfortunately here, you know, the back to back for Dallas is going to match up with a back to back for Texas because Texas is at home, but they're in this weird little AHL type deal where they don't play at all during the week, but then they go back to back on the weekend.
Yeah.
So Poirier has absolutely no NHL experience. So that would show, I don't know what that would mean as far as trust of anybody. You certainly can't trust somebody who you've brought up and sat on their butt in the reserve spot on the bench for 2.5-3 weeks.
Yeah. No, I mean, it'd be a tough spot. You know, you would think that like one of the Chicago games or Montreal would have been a great time to get him in. At the same time, if you're the Stars And if you think Ottinger's coming back, and by the way, the health update there is apparently he's now graduated to day-to-day from week to week. So nothing is imminent or announced, but he seems to be progressing fine. But I could also see the mentality of the Stars as well. We've got a bunch of cream puffs followed by the Avalanche. Let's just ride Wedgwood and hope that we get Ottinger back before it turns into a thing. The baseball analogy, right? Let's see if this guy can get through the lineup one more time.
It's the Lindy Ruff team of old. Let's score our way out of all our problems.
They came pretty close to doing it last night.
And to tell you the truth, I mean, that Montreal game was kind of an anomaly. If you take a look at the expected goal difference there, including, of course, that barrage at the end. But the Stars were consistently getting chances. They just weren't putting them in net. And scoring a lot of goals is a good way to make your team look good.
It was interesting. Well, it's how you maintain the record you maintain with the goaltending you're getting, even Ottinger before he went out. It reminds me as well, Mark, we were talking about this in the pre-call, about the kind of negativeness of Stars fandom. And I think that it's in my mind, it's almost like we as fans are in this transition stage. You know, we used to be at a point where the team wasn't very good, right? We're coming out of bankruptcy, and then we only had one line, and then we didn't have a goaltender. Like, there was always something. So like moral victories, we led the league in moral wins, right? And so you could weather you just sort of shrugs. Yeah, of course they got goalied again. They always get goalied, right? It's gonna happen. Oh no, we're playing somebody's e-bug. Of course, shutout, right? But
we forget. But there was a certain point where we were the ones who were goalieing people, and you know, take a look at the career stats for Kari Lehtinen and pre-injury, of course, yeah. But you know, the Stars were that perennial team that you hated. We're tough to play against, and we got a goaltender who's going to stand on his head and steal one from you. And now we're kind of the big dog on the block, and so people are looking to do that to the Dallas Stars.
Yeah, it's I agree. But we've got that. So we've got all that baggage, and now the team is good, right? And good teams like Tampa Bay, right? They'll go entire months without looking particularly good. Vasilevsky started the season terribly. And Bolts fans just like, he'll pick it up. It doesn't matter. We'll get to the postseason. Everything will be fine. They may be wrong about that, but they've got, it's almost like you have to have like good team calluses built up on your fandom so that you can look at a result. You're going to look at a result like Montreal, and you're either going to look at it and say, well, this validates everything I've ever worried about, and we're terrible and it's over. Or you're going to look at it and say, 82 game season, weird stuff happens, backup goaltender, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Stars fans, at the first sign of a crack, they're going to want to tear the whole building down.
Yep. Yeah. So I think we're seeing that in the fans' reaction, right? And I mean, you know, check back in a month, and I think there's also this notion of we want our team to be the best, when in reality we're probably half tier beneath the best, and that's a great place to be considering the last decade or so of Stars fandom. But there's still that, like, you know, our measuring sticks as fans have changed from, you know, the middle of the pack to Vegas and to Colorado and to teams that have won cups. And when you look at it through that lens, you worry about a single game like Montreal, when in reality, like, it's fine, right? They dropped over the last, you know, what, four games, they dropped what, 2 points, 3 points. That pace will get you into the show. If Radek Foxa, we talked about ifs and ands last podcast, right? If he hits the empty net last night, we're having a much different conversation. And that's, and it's difficult in the moment to maintain that perspective, but really that's the perspective you need, right? He shot a foot wide. Right. And if he scores that, then they've knocked off Colorado in regulation despite losing their best defender. And hey, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but then this is hockey. And that's kind of the weird thing. And it's the thing I always have to come back to, is that of all the major sports that we have in the United States, hockey is the one where randomness, if you will, plays the biggest role. You know, there's matters of inches. You know, what's the difference between hitting the pipe and going bar down? It's a millimeter. Stuff happens, especially over an 82 game season, where you can't really set your team up to play each individual opponent with your strengths against their weaknesses. You roll it out there, you hope for the breaks, and your raw talent will get you into the playoffs. And then in the playoffs, the real thing starts.
Yeah. The only thing to worry about, in fact, you maybe don't want to finish first because that might be Edmonton. So, before we get out of here, though, I did want to bring up, and sorry, anything else on the goaltending, anything else on fandom before I...
Well, I think we do have to recognize what's going on with the Central Division and goaltenders, and Jake Oettinger, bless his heart, is our all-star for the Dallas Stars, and how did that happen?
I mean, that part, I think it's less... So, I think there's a couple different things, right? I think that Jake Oettinger is our all-star because there have been kind of superfluous performances in the division at the forward and defensive positions, right? So Miro hasn't quite been what we hoped he'd be this season, statistically, certainly. The top line, same thing, right? Despite a hot start, the bin unit has cooled down. You could make the case that, Duchesne or Sagan deserves that nod. So it's to me, it's one of those, like, there are guys in the division at the forward and the defensive positions that are statistically ahead of what the Stars have. And since every team gets a representative, Oettinger has the cachet of a couple of fantastic playoff runs. He started the season like gangbusters. He's been hurt lately. So our view of him is skewed very positive. There are guys taking the slots elsewhere. So, just for one example, right, despite Duchesne is having a fantastic season, Nathan McKinnon's probably an MVP candidate, right? So you can see how, looking at each individual position, how it wasn't necessarily a guy from the Stars. And then you get to goaltending, and it's been, I just pointed, Soros hasn't been great. Chicago's a garbage fire. Kind of looking elsewhere in the division, like, I guess, Connor Hellebuck, right?
He's a guy. Hellebuck's the obvious choice there. I mean, you can't go with Georgiev because McKinnon, even though he's leading the league in wins, his numbers aren't all that good. The kid up in Minnesota has been pretty good, but you're not going to leave, who is it, Kaprizov, I would guess.
Yeah, he's been better lately as well, I think.
Yeah, but even reputation-wise, that's probably the guy you're going to take from Minnesota. I'm actually a little surprised it wasn't, Joe Pavelski.
Yeah, but I think if he'd been doing more at even strength.
Yeah, but you think they look at it that close?
No. Maybe it's because it's a perception thing. As good as, it's the Jason Robertson conundrum. The guy is on a point-per-game pace, which is a 20-ish point drop from where he was last. He's pacing to 25 goals. He scored 40 last season. So it's the whole, like, yeah, yes, absolutely. He's had, I think it's 10 points in a 7-game scoring streak, but we kind of expected him to have 15 points in that 7-game streak. So we look at it a little bit differently, fair or not.
I have a cartoon I keep by my desk. It's about an employee evaluation, and in one frame, the employee goes, "I donated a kidney to a customer." And the boss says, "I noted that under attendance problem." So, expectations are everything.
I love that. Yeah. And then just looking at the rest, like, okay, so if I think the league stated it, every team gets a representative, right? So you sure can't bring the goaltenders from Chicago, St. Louis, Minnesota, right? They haven't been any good.
You can bring Binnington.
Diaper
the
baby.
Goaltender the All-Star game deserves.
Guys, anyway, all I'm saying is I can see how if this was strictly a merit-based conversation, I think that you would take somebody else from the Stars. You might take Miro. It'd be Miro or Duchesne for my money if we're strictly talking about effort. Or honestly, Hintz, because Hintz is the best player on the Dallas Stars. But
yeah, he's not going to go because of that.
But yeah, when you factor in like the logistics of, well, no, everybody gets one. Then it's like, okay, well, then that's Oettinger is the most, he is the most better, I think. Well, he is the most better star compared to his division.
Don't you think you could have just taken Ryan Suter and be done with it?
Can you imagine? Just like, what do you think? You're in the Discord. You're on the, you're in the socials. what does Stars fandom do with the Ryan Suter NHL All-Star Year of Our Lord 2024 announcement?
They just roll with it and start come up with the narrative about how Suter's been carrying Haskinen all year.
You know, he might have to down the stretch. Buckle up, baby. 25-minute-a-night Ryan Suter incoming. All right. I want to talk about one kind of interesting thing, one more interesting thing before we go. And I want to preface this by saying that it definitely got them killed in overtime, because to me, and this is, I come not to bury Tyler Seguin, but to praise him, the play that he didn't make along the wall leading to Colorado's 2-on-0 winner last night in overtime. We were talking about this in the hockey Slack last night. To me, this is whenever people talk about whenever blowhards like Castillo talk about just converting a forward to defense, right? This is why David is wrong. Because the way that you play defense is different, forward versus defense. And the primary reason it's different is when you're a forward, you know that there's somebody behind you. So the decisions that you make, the things that you do, it is an acceptable outcome to lunge for that puck, risking getting behind you, because you are well into the offensive zone and you're trained, you know, your life experience tells you you've got somebody over your shoulder that's going to turn that into a turnover. You know what I mean? Like, it's probably, yeah, you know, more often than not, Tyler Seguin makes that pinch, gets beat, and his covering defender just keeps the puck deep in the zone, right? Or starts his way back. Now, situationally, 3-on-3, it turns, you know, a bunch of things went wrong in that instance, but I don't think he made I don't think that it was a mistake so much as a player in an uncomfortable situation.
Yeah, he makes the standard read as opposed to the 3-on-3 read, and that's why you really need to practice 3-on-3, yep, because your reads are different.
Yeah, their reads are different, and as well the reads of the other players on the ice, right? A defenseman on the ice might very well have had a different, because I think at the time it was Seguin, Henson, Deshane, Robertson. So it was three forward sets. And, you know, the other bit is a defenseman very possibly looks at that play developing and thinks, oh, my forward's about to do something silly, right? He is trained to attack that puck. I am trained to provide cover. I'm going to go ahead and slide back into the neutral zone and at least make this a 2-on-1.
Yeah.
Instead, forwards are attack, attack, attack.
The three forward thing, yeah, you could probably work it if you practice it enough, and maybe the Stars have been practicing it. I don't know. I thought was really weird here was that when Thomas Harley was on the ice, they didn't have him guarding McKinnon. And
maybe it's a trust thing. Kid
could very well be, but it's like yet. You would think that you would take your defender if you're going to go as traditional two forward, one defender, and you would put that defender on the number one offensive threat. And the Stars didn't even do that.
Yeah.
So I had some questions about the whole strategy for what we did.
I mean, I will say the part of it that I liked is I think that going with a three forward set, especially if Miro is out for this roster, makes a ton of sense, because who else are you going to put out there? We saw glimpses of Esa Lindell on the ice in overtime. And, you know, this isn't, again, I'm not here to take a torch to that guy either, but that's not, it's not.
Lindell has scored overtime winners. You
know? He sure has. Right. Lots of guys have. That doesn't mean I want them doing it today, right now. So all I'm saying is I think with Dallas's personnel, for all of the complaining we've done sometimes about NHL coaching orthodoxy and their, you know, refusal to innovate or experiment, I thought, I mean, if Matt Duchene gets a very, you know, puts the puck into an empty net, much like the Roddick Fox empty net goal or empty net miss.
Or doesn't catch a major slash across the wrist as he's going in.
Yep. Yeah, so there's a situation where we're talking about last night and saying, hey, DeBoer reacted beautifully to a sudden change in his available talent. But yeah, if we're looking at a team sans Miro Haskinen for an extended stretch, I think in overtime, you hope you don't play a ton of it. But I think you have to look at more Harley and three forward sets as the right, you know, the right configuration, because otherwise, you know, it's pretty clear the team, potentially rightfully so, not necessarily a mistake, but, you know, the team probably doesn't have enough trust in Nils Lundqvist to throw him out there in overtime And then you've got what, you know, Suter, Lindell, Hockenpah, Hanley. And I challenge you, Mark, what would you think, you know, if you're running the Stars bench, right, who would you rather send over with Tyler Seguin and Jason Robertson, right? Would you rather send over Hintz or Duchesne, or would you rather send over Hockenpah or Hanley?
I'm going to send over the guy who recognizes that puck possession is everything, and that unless you have a extremely high percentage chance of scoring, you should back it out and maintain possession. Yeah. And especially with this team where you have so many guys who are awesome at the shootout, the worst case scenario you should have out of this is that you don't win it in overtime and you go to the shootout where you have a fighting chance. And in this case, I would say probably at least a 2/3, 3/4 chance of winning it in a shootout. So my take on it is that I have no problem with throwing Esa Lindell over the boards in overtime, as long as what you tell Esa is that what he needs to do is just control the puck and make sure that the other team never gets it.
Yeah, I see that.
I mean, it's not fun.
No.
That's how you win this. That's how you win this thing. The games are different.
No, yeah, you're right.
It's a 3-on-3 game.
And I think that's how an NHL coach thinks. The counter argument I would make that any NHL coach in the league would laugh me out of the room is, it's also about chance creation, and it's also about a certain amount of puck luck and randomness. And there could be a benefit in, you know, put three high-end players out there and see what they can create. It's positionless. It's 3-on-3 is positionless enough anyways. I wonder what a, you know, I think Duchesne, Hintz, and Seguin, or Duchesne, Hintz, and Robertson, or Duchesne, Hintz, and, you know, another facilitator. I think there's a lot there.
All I can say is I think if you gave me Steele, Boxa, and Lindell, and I was allowed to coach them to play 3-on-3 the way I want them to play, they would get more points than anything that you do.
Interesting. That is fascinating. I don't even necessarily disagree, but I'd sure like to see somebody try.
There would be riots in the streets, and people would wonder what you were doing. All you would do is make it to the shootout, and then, you know, Duchesne and Seguin and Pavelski and Robertson and all these guys who score at a 40 to 50% shootout rate would just come in and destroy the other team.
I mean, that is the strategy. You have invented the overtime turtle, Mark. And my God, look at what we have wrought on this podcast today. You have turned 3-on-3 into a turtle situation. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, that's the two approaches, right? Do you try and win, or do you play keep away and wait for the shootout?
But it's a turtle in the offensive zone, so it's not truly a turtle.
It's a turtle's a turtle is a turtle. Turtles all the way down, Mark. Turtles all the way down.
All right. Well, that sounds like my hot take for the month. So,
you know,
I have no more.
We're taked out. I can't even. All right. Well, thank you for that. Just for that alone, the previous 50 minutes plus was also great. But that's really, I think, the moment that I want to thank you for. KT, how you edit this into something coherent will be your masterpiece. Listeners that stuck around this long, bless you. We love you.
We're sorry.
it's been a heck of a podcast. Like it, download it, you know, listen to it. Don't hold us to it. And we'll see what happens, I guess.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.